I mean, bird watching, that's got to be creepy for birds. I mean, what are we doing? These birds are just hanging out. We ignore them most of the time. Suddenly, some like couple from Ohio is just obsessed with their bird. Bird's like, what? Me? You happy? Piss off. What do you want? I wouldn't be surprised if the bird bath was invented by some sort of bird pervert. I mean, some guy's in his kitchen just looking out the window. Oh, yeah, splash around in there, bird.
TBTL.
TBTL coming across the airwaves full of love through the sky.
It's embarrassing and it's gross, but at least it's kind of funny.
This thing turns out to be half as important as I figured it just might be. I'd say that you're all in line for some important promotions and personal citations when this thing's over with.
You have to be it so we don't see it. You have to live it or we won't forgive it. You have to inhabit it. Or leave it in the cabinet.
Maybe this podcast is just too beautiful to live.
Oh,
yeah.
All right, let's do this, people. It is time for a Wednesday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
It's an audiophile's nightmare.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
There's a Hidden Valley Ranch party in my mouth.
Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center.
Oh, yeah.
Perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington. The Bay City. It's an overcast morning here. Not too bad, though, actually. Seems like the sun is trying to peek through over Squalicum Mountain. And we're very excited to have you all along here for episode 2846 in a collector series.
Let the fun begin.
We have been... trying to, unsuccessfully attempting to get to two top stories for the last couple of days. Yesterday we had some very important business to attend to of me writing an apology letter 6 years later to Weird Al Yankovic's manager. I'll tell you later if I've heard back from him or not. That took up a lot of yesterday's show, so it meant we didn't get to the story about Washington State getting rid of daylight saving time, or at least trying to. So we'll talk about that today. And then this 12-year-old journalist in Arizona who's really just putting lots of adult paid journalists to shame. It's amazing.
Kids and fantasy.
So we'll tell you about the latest with the Orange Street News. Plus, we've got a bunch of voicemails. I believe Andrew cracked open that Ark of the Covenant recently, and so we'll listen to some of those too. And speaking of the longest running Cobro of the show, we can only hear Yanni. Believe it or not, he's a complete catch. I'd say his voice is sort of a combination of Fergie and Jesus. He would like to start today's program with a kind of a public service announcement having to do with food safety.
Stay away from the tuna, it smells funny tonight.
Just, you know, a little helpful hint here at the top of the show. He's Andrew Walsh. And he joins me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Oh, that was not a pleasant sound for anybody, including myself. Boy, do I sound...
I think it's nice.
I perpetually sound plugged up. I am plugged up today because I got a little bit of a head cold, and maybe that was yesterday's. But every time somebody plays my voice back to me, I'm perpetual head cold guy. I hate my voice.
Okay, I'm not going to replay it so as to prove my point, because I'm not trying to, like, torture you with it.
Uh-huh.
But I thought you sounded nice, and you were in tune, and no, I think it's just that nobody likes the sound of their own voice. Do you think, like, Barry White liked the sound of his own voice?
God,
is there anybody who's got, maybe Chioki Iansen, who was on the show last week, he does all the... underwriting reads for NPR. Is there anybody who has a good enough voice that they hear it and they're like, yeah?
I'll bet you some singers do. You know, like I...
But speaking voice is different than singing voice,
that's true.
Right?
That's true. Yeah. I don't know. I have a lot of questions for you, though. A couple of things here.
Okay.
If you don't mind at the top.
I have...
I might even lead us...
Some answers.
Okay. This one is probably going to lead us into a very dangerous place, but let's try it. First of all... This is kind of an aside, but I'm going to read you an email that somebody sent to me here at the top.
Call Kenny Loggins because you're in the danger zone.
Because we're going to try to solve a mystery. But she wrote at the end of this email, P.S. Gotta watch out for that Nora. And I've seen some other just kind of vague references to me needing to watch my back. Did when Nora filled in or when you interviewed Nora on the show last week when I was gone, was there more of this talk of her replacing me or something? What's going on?
Hey, listeners, could you guys please not ruin everything?
This is why I can't have nice things.
I think Nora made some joke about wanting to co-host the show, and then I deflected by saying you and Andrew should host the show together. Oh. That was, I believe, what the comment was. Yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it's
no.
Exactly the noise I'm making with my mouth.
Boy, that solves that solves the Burbank problem. That the listeners have been complaining about for a long time.
Okay. A most elegant solution.
Okay, so putting that as...
Yes,
aside,
Nora is not coming for your job. If anything, Nora is coming for my job. But again, I knew you probably wouldn't dig into the... into the hours of tape that I recorded for last week's series of shows. I figured it didn't really matter. I did, when she said that, I thought, I don't want Andrew to feel insecure or threatened by this, which is probably why I said you and Andrew should host together.
Yeah, right.
But then the listeners, God bless these listeners, the lifeblood of this show. I mean, we would be nothing without them. Like, literally, we wouldn't have a show. But guys, read the room.
All right. Well, this okay.
Why now? What are they doing? And how can you steer clear of it all?
Happened to be the second drop.
That is my favorite drop of all time. I'll never forget that I was in Los Angeles when you don't usually do this. Usually if you have a new drop, you'll just play it on the show and I'll laugh. But that one you texted to me. You pulled it off of Cairo Radio. I don't remember where you were living at the time, but I was in LA.
I had Sean DeTore, our guy on the inside of Cairo Radio.
Yeah, make me a filet mignon or mignon.
I think I heard it while I was driving, and I was like, hey, Sean, can you find that, like, I don't know what it was, Choke Points promo or something, and could you send it to me? And he did, and that's some quality audio that works well for our purposes.
Okay, speaking of drops, this note from Sarah is a follow-up to one that she sent me way back in December. And she said, I'm dying over here trying to figure out where this drop came from. The drop is well, said in a sassy, accusatory tone by a young woman or girl, and it's kind of a cartoonish voice. I wrote back at the time, I have no idea. It's not this one from the Breakfast Club, is it?
Well, look who's back.
There it is. I think this is... Did you play that on the show the other day? Because Sarah wrote back and said, I just heard it again. Who is that? Help Sarah.
It is just a not particularly famous person off of YouTube. It is a young woman. It was some time where either I was coming back after a long break or you were coming back or we were rejoining forces. And I thought, oh, we should have a little drop about Look Who's Back. And that was the result of an internet search for somebody on YouTube saying, Look Who's Back.
Okay.
And so it's not from a movie or anything that, like, but I could send it to you, Andrew, and then.
Well, Look Who's Back.
And then I believe the young woman was saying it about herself, I think. Like
I
she was
see.
Back to her
she
YouTube channel. She was back on her YouTube bullshit.
Right.
And so I could send it to you, and maybe you could send it to the listener if that's any help.
Yeah, send it to me. The more of those drops that I have, the easier the transition will be when me and Nora take over this rig. Speaking of drops, another question I have for you. At the beginning of today's show, I heard a new drop in there, or what I think is a new drop. It's a nightmare for audiophiles. Is that our friend Kai Rizdahl from Marketplace?
The one, the only.
It's an audiophile's nightmare.
I've actually played that before, but you may have been a bit distracted. It's relatively new to the catalog.
Uh-huh.
Again, I just heard him say it, and I thought, that's pretty funny. That would work for what we do. There's a drop that's bouncing around the universe, Andrew, that I can't... I'm sure you can relate to this. Carrie and I were watching TV the other night.
That's my wife.
And I saw something on TV, and I thought, oh, my God, that's a perfect drop for us.
Oh, man.
But I didn't write it down.
Yeah.
And now I'm trying to go back and figure. The likely suspect would be an episode of Dateline NBC.
Oof.
I believe it was a Dateline, because that was what we had been watching the night in question. And it was an, I think it was from an episode of Dateline NBC, where a story of a boyfriend and girlfriend who had gone to Miami for New Year's Eve, and unfortunately the girlfriend had gone missing and ultimately was found dead. And somebody in the episode, I just remember the word pit bull. Somebody just said something really funny, and then about somebody being a pit bull. And because, like, sometimes we play the fireball drop a lot, which is
fireball.
That's pit bull. And I sometimes will joke that you're Mr. Worldwide. It was a
wait.
Great,
that's a joke.
It was like,
go ahead.
I'll let you and your new co-host Nora work out the parameters of what is and is not a joke going forward. During my time on the show, which is now coming to an end, mm-hmm. that had been a joke. I apologize if this is the first you're hearing of it. But anyway, I went back and tried to find the episode of Dateline, and we had deleted it off of the DVR. And then my dedication to finding the audio drop just at that point was like, yeah, I guess I'm not going to ever have it. But it's going to haunt me for a while. And you know what that's like, right? Because you create much more of the audio content for this show than I do. You grab drops all the time. Do you have a system, or do you like make little notes to yourself when you're watching TV?
You know what I do? And also, I wanted to tell you this anyway, because it's related to your frustration right now. So here's what I do. I am in the living room with Genevieve watching TV. Often Genevieve is the one that spots them as well. And we'll be like, oh, that's a good drop. And so I pull out my little phone, pull out my little boop boop, and I email myself. And I always start.
Please never talk about pulling out your little boop boop.
All I did was say I pulled out
so
a little.
Dirty.
I am explicit. So kind of anal retentive in, you know me, I have my methods.
Please,
for
never
everything,
say
right?
Anal retentive.
Oh, yeah. Explicit.
I really feel like what I'm allowed to say is narrowing by the moment.
I will put in the subject line of the email either drop in all caps or intro tape in all caps, so that the next morning when I wake up and I check my Gmail, I will see a bunch of things that are either drops or intro tape. So I'm very specific in that. And then I will put the name of the show in the subject line. Then in the body of the email, I will put an approximate timestamp. I will put an approximate paraphrase of what the drop is. And any other kind of just quick detail, so that the next day when I'm sitting behind my computer and I open up my Hulu or my Netflix or my, you know, Xfinity on demand, I can find that relatively quickly with this trail of breadcrumbs that I have left. The other day I did all of that. It's embarrassing how ritualized I am. So I open up the one, it says intro tape or drop, and it has all of the information, the timestamp, a vague quote, no mention of the characters. I didn't say what the show was. I have no idea what the show was. And that was a night where we had watched a whole bunch of different things. I think we were catching up on some new TV. And all of that work, all of that boop-booping for nothing.
Yeah, it sounds like it's not even that it's a complicated system. It's just that you have a system.
It's just kind of a nerdy system.
You're just in the
system.
Habit of making a note. And that's probably what I need to start doing too, because I'll try to remember it, and I'm increasingly not good at remembering things as I move into and really blow through middle age here. If I seem a little distracted here at the top of the show, it's because I have to, and I am not trying to get political, but I have to actively avert my gaze. In fact, you know what, Andrew, I'm going to do this. Closing the laptop that I had open that was monitoring the Michael Cohen hearings.
Oh, yeah.
Because holy, holy bombshells. I can't look away. I cannot. I was on my way back from the Y this morning, right as the whole thing was starting, and I was riveted by way of the radio, and then I got in here, and it feels historic to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it will change anything, and that's where I don't want to try to get political, because I just don't think people care about us talking about it, and also I don't know enough about the topic. But just purely from a – I don't know. I feel like I will remember I here would be my prediction would be that some years from now we're still saying, oh yeah, that, and then the, and then what happened after the Cohen hearing? Like, it feels like an important historic moment for our country. Now, maybe that's just my liberal bias seeping in, but I'm glad I wanted to watch it because I wanted to be able to, like, later on go, oh yeah, I remember that day clearly. I remember what happened in those hearings.
You know what's, I'm embarrassed to kind of admit this, so I'll choose my words carefully, which never works out well. But as we've discussed on the show recently, I kind of burned through a couple of podcasts that talk about the various scandals that happened during the Nixon administration, Slow Burn and Bagman, and I really kind of immersed myself in that for a week or two. And then that I kind of ran out of episodes on that, and I think I was feeling a bit of a longing for more. I'm sure a lot of people know that mm-hmm. feeling when you get done with a 3-hour episode of TBTL and you just want more, you know. I just kind of wanted more. But you know, I turn on the radio.
Do we have Luke typing on a word processor or something?
What would that sound like? And so whatever, I was out of podcasts, and then I turn on probably NPR, maybe MSNBC. I've been watching that on my phone a lot lately, just kind of as I putter. It's kind of become almost like a replacement for radio in some cases. And I realized, oh wow, this is sort of scratching that same itch, only I'm hearing it all in real time, sort of. And then I was like, yeah. Oh god, this isn't freaking entertainment. And I mean, also neither is the right. reporting on the Nixon stuff. Like, that was interesting. Like, that is something about podcasts, them being both, you know, reporting and entertainment at the same time, which, you know, different podcasts do a better job of kind of walking those journalistic lines. But it just was this moment of like, I don't know, trying to appreciate the moment for saying, listen, I'm going back and I'm listening to this incredible, dark, but incredible moment in U.S. political history. In the same time, I'm living through one of those. And while, you know, this is being kind of packaged up and I'm hearing the highlights 40 years later, 40 some years later, I'm hearing it all like a fire hose coming at me now, and I'm almost like trying to think, like, is this thing that I'm hearing about today, will this make the cut right. for the slow burn of the future?
Right. I don't know, man. That's the big question. Like, I certainly think if what was happening now, well, I mean, I think it's arguable that Nixon did way less than the current president mm-hmm. has been proven to have done, really. But the political climate is different. And the reason that Nixon had to resign was because at some point the Republicans in that era were like, all right, sorry, dude, we cannot back mm-hmm. this anymore. I don't know if the Republicans of our current era, as I was watching the hearings, particularly this guy who's the ranking member, which is to say he's the Republican on the committee. So he's like in the minority, but he's like the most important member of the minority on that committee. I mean, that guy has no shame. By the way, from Ohio, so I hope you're happy, Andrew.
Sorry.
Jim Jordan. Yeah, and I think your apology to the listeners of TBTL and the American people is long overdue.
I'll write something out.
He does not seem like the kind of person who would ever say to the current president, okay, it's been enough. Because listening to Michael Cohen's testimony today, look, Michael Cohen was, by his own admission, a really bad dude for a long time, very shady, and did a lot of things that were inappropriate and illegal, and was really threatening to people, and like he was just horrible right up until he had an almost like cinematic change of heart. I've never seen somebody in my lifetime, somebody in public life that I can remember, go from being like, I mean, he was the guy berating people on the phone and threatening their family and career and their sort of everything about their life, short of physically hurting them. He was doing that on behalf of Donald Trump. And then next thing you know, he's like, I don't want a pardon. I will take my jail time. I have been a horrible human. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you all about it. It has the ring of truth to me. Again, that's probably somewhat influenced by my political perspective. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, are we in the midst of – are we in Slow Burn season 4? Actually, it'd be like, are we in Slow Burn season 20?
40, yeah.
Right now. And a lot of it comes down to the answer is yes, we should be. But is the political climate such that this will have no impact? It will just become a matter of if Donald Trump is not reelected, then we move past this, I think, very, very dark period of governance. And hopefully we move forward and we get people in office, whether they're Republican or Democrat, who behave a little bit more along the lines of the norms. Is this a big enough domino that it will knock down other dominoes and we will look back on it like, oh, yeah, it all really started to get going with that Cohen testimony. I'm listening to him today and I'm like, I don't understand how somebody who has ears to hear, as they would say in the Bible. I don't understand how somebody who is listening with their ears could not understand that what he is saying is accurate. He has the receipts, as we say these days. So I guess I'm not really answering the question that you didn't even really pose. But that's kind of what we do on this show. Unposed and unanswered. It's TBTL.
Can I just say the one thing, and maybe we should move on from this, but I will say the one thing, the one magical thing about living in the era that we live in right now is we suddenly realize how refreshingly presidential President Nixon was. Think about that. You listen to that, you're just like, wow. Even the guy who's been the biggest villain in American politics from my perspective growing up. And it's like, man, it would be great just to have a real presidential guy in the White House again.
Yeah. That's happened with so many people. I know that George W. Bush's legacy is very complicated because I feel like there was the time where people were saying, and I think I even made this joke a few times, man, I would crawl across broken glass to get George W. Bush back in office. And then that was the first wave of the George W. Bush conversation during the Trump era. And then the second wave was he also sent us to Iraq and started all of these endless wars that we're still fighting. So to say that is you know what I mean? It was sort of the redemption of George W. Bush and then the unredemption of George W. Mm-hmm. Bush. I don't know which phase we're on right now with him, but you're absolutely right. There's so much stuff that, you know what? Just put 2 minutes on the clock, please. I'll try to get this out of my system because I know that, again, I know that this is not the place for politics necessarily, but it's really interesting because in a certain way, you're right.
Here, I have a clock.
This is unprecedented.
Here.
Okay, good. Dear clock,
I'm sorry.
Why do you sound like a typewriter?
Go ahead.
Signed, Luke Burbank. In certain ways, the political climate just feels like it feels so tense and so driven by anger and the need to win as opposed to the need to try to get to a solution that will be good for the American people. It just feels like it's so bad. It could have never been this bad before. But then I remember my time when I worked in conservative talk radio out of college, and I was a pretty conservative dude. I guess I would have called myself, socially liberal and fiscally conservative. But I mean, I remember that I worked during the impeachment of Bill Clinton, and Bill Clinton has got a very complicated legacy now and is a very complicated public figure, and I think there should be a reckoning for him at some mm-hmm. point about his sexual behavior, because I think he's a predator. That being said, the impeachment of Bill Clinton was theatricality to its highest, and I didn't realize it at the time because I was working in conservative talk radio and I was drinking their Kool-Aid. I was like, oh, yeah, well, he did this while he was president. He lied about it. It's all stuff that is so much less relevant to the presidency than the stuff that Trump is accused of having done. But I just remember at the time just being like, yeah, man, it only makes sense that they would impeach him. And then now looking back on it with the hindsight of more information and being older and actually not living in this weird conservative echo chamber, Ken Starr has made a recent reemergence, and you realize just what absolute bullshit the Starr report was, and just how politically motivated the Republicans wanted to try to damage Bill Clinton. And so they went after him over this thing, which, again, was so much less germane to being president than the stuff that, that Trump is alleged to have done. Because I don't think anyone cares that much that Trump had an affair. But the payoffs and the backrooms, so as to not lose the election, that stuff is really relevant to the presidency. Anyway, I guess my point is just I don't have a good perspective on if this is the blurst of times or the worst of times, because sometimes it feels like this is just like it's never been this bad. And then I remember we also had a civil war in this country. We also used to openly not allow people of color to use the same water fountains. So I don't know. I sure hope that this is just a particularly bad swing of the pendulum for this country.
Yeah.
But I just don't have I don't have enough perspective or real knowledge, which is why I would recommend people check out Why Is This Happening? Chris Hayes' podcast, which is really good. It does give a lot of context. And like you said, Slow Burn and Bagman and shows like that, because, you know, there's at least – and to your comment earlier, Andrew, about the question of the entertainment value of that stuff, I think of, as I do so often, the picture Bible that I used to read when I was a kid, which was like a comic book version of the Bible. And that thing, I tore through it because it was like a comic. And I was like, this is very entertaining. But I was also picking up the broad strokes of the Bible so that when my middle school class, when we got to go, so a select few of us, to the junior high convention in Longview, Washington, where we competed in such events as the 2 mile run, monologue competition, where I did Casey at the Bat, and also Bible Bowl, I crushed Bible Bowl. I single-handedly, and I don't like to brag, Andrew, but I single-handedly carried the North Seattle Christian Lions to a dominant victory in the category of Bible trivia because of having read the picture Bible. And here's where I'm going with this. I think that there's nothing wrong with finding the inherent entertainment value of historical things if it gets people like me to engage with history.
Sure.
If I'm going to trust Rachel Maddow's reporting, and I do, or if I'm going to trust Leon Neyfuck and his crew that did Slow Burn, I know much more about those topics than I used to, and because they made them entertaining.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree, and I think those guys do it really well. And I had just sort of said in an offhanded way, there are others that are kind of like take on a more of a reporting kind of vibe. But I think, you know, we've seen other podcasts that are reporting on things more, things that are going on right now. And I think there's some weird blurring of journalistic lines. But no, both of those I completely stand behind. And I would really encourage people, like, if any of this sounds quasi interesting to you, trust me, it's so much more interesting than you think. Both seasons of Slow Burn, as a matter of fact, the second one being kind of another look at the Lewinsky situation. And
I haven't listened to that one yet, dude.
Because you and I grew up around the same time, and I think that being somebody who would grow up to identify as, you know, a liberal person, but even before that, you know, I grew up in a very conservative house too, and I had some pretty conservative ideas as well. But I still kind of just always had this feeling that, like, Clinton was getting railroaded to a degree. And when you look at not just, like, it's just a really eye-opening look. It takes you on a journey because Leon, what's his last name again? Norfolk.
I think it's Neyfuck.
Neyfuck. He actually starts the podcast by kind of saying that he saw Clinton the same way that I'm describing my perspective on the situation. And I remember he says that at the end of the very first podcast. I was like, it's interesting that you just inserted yourself in this, dude. Everything has been third person, and now you're suddenly telling us, you know, how you look at Clinton. And then I didn't get it until the very, very end of the series when I realized, wow, you've taken me on a journey. I started from kind of what your perspective was too, and then over the course of this thing, you just it opened my eyes to a lot of perspectives that I didn't consider before, including the way the media treated Lewinsky and just all the ins and outs, and the way that I look at Clinton has forever changed because of that as well. And maybe it shouldn't have taken that podcast. Maybe there are plenty of other things, plenty of other information around that I could have sussed out a little bit sooner. the crimes of Bill Clinton, but there was something about this podcast taking me on a journey, and then at the end realizing, oh, that's why Leon wanted to kind of insert his own perspective on it, because at the end you realize, oh, I've taken the same journey he has. Like, this whole thing has been a very eye-opening experience. So,
are there, like, the MAGA version of these podcasts? Because, I mean, I think that these, like, you know, something like Bagman is made not from a political perspective, really. I mean, I guess it is in a way, because, I mean, Rachel Maddow, everybody knows, you watch her on MSNBC. It's like she has a point of view. And part of what's interesting about that, looking back at Nixon, or I should – sorry, I should say really looking back at Spiro T. Agnew, is that he was sort of a demagogue, and he had a way – he was very – he had a way of, like, just getting his followers to discount any media reports that were not flattering to him. He was sort of the original fake news guy. Or at least he was a very effective proponent of that idea. Speaking of which, can I just say this really quick? I would really like – I'm just going to sort of speak, I guess, to other, like, progressives, other liberal types. Do you think there's an argument, Andrew, to be made for everyone on our side of these things to just stop using the term fake news? I don't think it should be given any more energy, because – when we say fake news, a lot, like, you know, something that Jacob Wall, that, like, weird 20-year-old kid who goes around who's been permanently banned from Twitter.
I met him once in a hipster coffee shop, I think.
I don't get that.
He became famous because he would tweet out these things like, just overheard these libs in a hipster coffee shop talking about secretly in hushed tones about how great Trump is doing. Like, he just kind of kept coming back to that, and I think it kind of became kind of a thing.
Well, he like when he will say he has, when he will create literally a fake entity with his, I think, like, mom's phone number to try to say that Robert Mueller has, you know, there are skeletons in Robert Mueller's closet. Like, that is fake news. Like, when Alex Jones is saying that Sandy Hook is, you know, those are crisis actors, that is fake news. That is literally fake stories. But when we, the left, call it fake news, we legitimize this term that then is used by the president to say that the New York Times, when it reports accurately a story about him, is fake news. I just don't think – it's like if fake news is a football, I don't want to play that game. I want us to talk about a different – let's have a different ball at the center of this game we're playing. Because when – I feel like when liberals use fake news to describe things that are made up, it makes it like – it somehow adds some legitimacy to when the right uses it, oftentimes to decry very legitimate reporting.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think I use that. I hate that term. It gives me a very bad feeling, and it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. Even if somebody's saying it kind of ironically, oh, fake news, or as a punchline to a joke. Like, and you're saying that because, all right, Trump's going around. He's saying it for real. And then it is a kind of a ridiculous thing. So then it just becomes sort of this joke. You say something on TBTL unrelated to politics. I'm like, yeah, fake news. And then it's also used, like you say, kind of, I guess, on the left in real ways as well. Like, I just don't like the term. To me, that's a Trumpian term, and it's dangerous and not funny.
I agree. But I hear it. I'm surprised at how often I hear people – you know, who are Democrats, I guess you could say, or at least just like not Trump supporters, they'll say it about something because it's just efficient. Mm-hmm, it's a quick way to describe something as being not accurate. But I really think we all should do the work to come up with a different way to describe not accurate, like the stuff Alex Jones is doing, the stuff Mr. Coffee Shop is doing, all the, you know, stuff like that. Like, we should just say that's like inaccurate mm-hmm. or something. Like, because I'm with you. I find that term so offensive because it really is so – it's such a dangerous sort of cudgel to use against facts.
Yeah.
You know, I have a really – it's very triggering for me. Let me just say that.
I would just say that a fake news to me is a nothing burger.
Oh, God.
Oh,
I'm sorry,
let's get
everybody.
Out of this. Let's get out.
This is what happens when I'm just – this is what happens when I'm mainlining Michael Cohen testimony for hour, right? And then we turn the mics on, and then it's go time.
Imagine if you hadn't closed your laptop there. That whole half hour was based on you closing your laptop so we wouldn't talk about Cohen, by the way.
The last thing I'll say before the break is – Michael Cohen, you know, flawed truth teller that he is. God, he's perfectly designed for this hearing because he's an attorney she's a sharp-elbowed attorney. His whole professional career was arguing with people and being like this is not like they brought in some kind of wide-eyed normal citizen and sat them down and said, okay, you know, tell us what the president did. Like, it's funny watching these Republicans on the committee try to like rattle him and try to say stuff about him, you know, that's all probably true about his poor character in the past, but it's like he just he's like that video of Steven Seagal doing judo on like 400 people, I think, in Russia. Like, that was a really weird. I've known about that for a while because Camaro Kev is my lifeline to all things Seagal related. Yeah. But like, there's this great video going around of Steven Seagal doing, I want to say it's like it's a martial arts demonstration where he's just like fighting like 40 guys at once. But of course, everyone has to wait their turn and then run up. And then Steven Seagal, with like the least amount of enthusiasm you've ever seen, just sort of like will flip them over, you know, I get the sense they're kind of in on it. Uh-huh. But that's Cohen with these lawmakers who, I mean, say what you want about Cohen, but honestly, he's more of a bulldog. He's much tougher and he's better at arguing than most of these Republicans. And it's just kind of funny to watch him just, you know, just hadouken them. It's kind of great. Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a break while I look up if I used hadouken right. That's what I get when I try to. That's like isn't that a Mortal Kombat thing?
I have no idea. I think
that's a very powerful, it's a Street Fighter thing. And I'm going to do something, Andrew, that's a terrible idea. I'm going to play the hadouken sound effect from YouTube.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Which will probably be, it'll probably end up being a 30-second ad for AmeriQuest or something. But let's just see if this works here.
Hadouken!
It paid off.
Hadouken!
I just love how bad the audio quality of that is.
Hadouken!
Yeah, hadouken is when you like throw that big like fireball in Street Fighter.
Okay, gotcha.
Get it. I'm up on current video games like Street Fighter.
Yeah. Is that the one where you pulled somebody's spine out? I didn't really play those games much. I think it was at one arcade near my house that I would play sometimes. But is that the really violent one where people would fight, or like by those days' standards, the very violent one where you pull out people's spines?
I think so. This is maddening for the listeners because I don't know anything about video games. You might know 5% more of the current video game world, mostly Madden related. But,
I was playing Draw Something last night, so I think I would be the right person to. I really was. Now that I stopped playing Draw Something because
I saw it was on Twitter.
Yeah, my old iPad kind of wasn't supporting it anymore. When your iPad doesn't support Draw Something anymore, by the way, it is time for a new tablet. So anyway, last night I was like, let's get back into this Draw Something bullshit, and that's exactly what I did.
That is why, and this is real historical information, that is why the cave people, why they made those drawings on the inside of the cave, because their iPads could no longer support Draw Something.
Exactly.
And they were forced to just use rocks and charcoal and make those elaborate cave drawings.
Yeah, yeah. No, Grog was really upset about all the updates.
I knew we couldn't get to break until we had at least one good Grog joke.
Yeah.
I cannot believe he just told that joke.
And we got there, so now it's time for the break.
Great.
40 minutes in. All right, we'll take a break, then we'll come back with more TBTL. Stay where you are.
Train home. Birds pass by to tell me that I'm not alone. Well, I'm pushing myself to finish this part.
All right, let's thank our donors of the day. These generous people are making the show possible. I said earlier in the program, we would be nothing without the listeners. Even when they're blowing my cover about my plan to replace Andrew with Nora McInerney, even when that's happening, we remain completely and totally beholden in the best kind of way to these listeners, these people that donate to the show, people like Alan Maragoni of Martins Ferry, Ohio. The good news is that you and Alan co-share the blame for Representative Jim Jordan, Andrew. So,
yeah, I feel bad about that.
Take 50% of the guilt off of your shoulders.
A little better, yeah.
50% of it on? Mm-hmm. Good. Ann Bissell of Charlestown, Massachusetts. Brian Kirk of Philadelphia, PA. Molly Byrne of Columbus, Ohio. You know what? Now it's thirds. One third your fault, one third Alan's fault, and one third Molly's fault. At this rate, you're going to be down to almost no culpability.
Wow. This is great. I'm going to have to retract my apology.
Sandy Taggart of Portland, Oregon, and Jason Carter of Bronx, New York. Home of our friend Chris Hayes, by the way. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Sandy. Thank you, Molly. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Ann. And thank you, Alan. Thanks for making the show possible with your donations. This one, episode 2846, an A Collector series, is all thanks to you guys.
Hello, and welcome to Top Story.
Let's talk about this. There are two different proposed pieces of legislation here in the state of Washington to get rid of daylight saving time. You know, the spring ahead and fall back thing. I guess actually it's more than two. There are several proposals, according to the Seattle Times. This is Christine Claridge writing, says measures have been introduced in Washington and other states to do away with the time change. But this is the first year, according to the sponsor of one of the bills, that it seems to have the momentum to succeed. What people want is an extra hour of light in the evening rather than in the morning, according to Senator Sam Hunt from Olympia, who's the sponsor of one of the bills. Years ago, when people were talking about the permanent adoption of Pacific Standard Time rather than daylight time, this same lawmaker said he got in trouble for saying, "I like our late summer sunsets." People get very serious about this. But he said what California did changed the conversation. Voters in California backed a measure last November to adopt permanent daylight saving time. And Washington legislators say that could tip the balance for our state. So I guess California has already done this. That's news to me.
Is that what it is? California actually did it. It's not considering it. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
But I don't. What I don't understand about that is I've never experienced a time where I'm in a different time zone than California.
Yeah, no. That's why I'm confused here. Because I read this several. I think I sent this to you from Hawaii, right? So like I read this several days ago, and you know how my memory is. California has adopted it, but it hasn't kicked in yet. Is that what it is?
Yeah, because it has to be authorized by Congress.
Oh,
so California did a voter initiative.
Okay.
And I guess because there must be a thing where it's like, look, if a state decides to just go rogue and more or less declare their own time of day, I guess the idea is that there are federal implications. So it's basically California has decided to do this, and now it's just a matter of waiting for Congress to approve it. But the fact that California has decided to do it, if Congress were to approve it right now, and Washington hadn't done something, there would be conceivably a point where we would be an hour off from California, which would just be a very weird thought here in this part of the country, where it's like that's the orienting principle of time is like, what time is it on the West Coast? Now, the West Coast could have different time zones.
Yeah. And the fact that, you know, it says that Oregon and Idaho also have like actual legit chances of going in this direction as well, then I guess, you know, it does start to make sense for this group of states to all change at once. Although, like, listen, change, I think, is hard for anybody, and maybe especially old grumpy guys like me. But there's something nice about most of the country all changing at the same time. So I don't have to do different math depending on what time of year it is about what time it is in New York or Ohio where my parents live. It's always a 3-hour difference between us
and Jim Jordan,
Ohio.
You know what? I'm putting some of that's on Bob. Yeah. Bob's now taking 25%. You're taking 25%. Alan and Molly, you're not getting away easy. 25% for all of you.
Yeah. I'm down at 25%. Anyway, I don't want to be like, oh, wait, it's June. Okay, it's, so that means it's a four-hour difference. Oh, wait, it's December. It's a three-hour difference. You know, I do. I know that there is a couple of states that do opt out of changing their time. But
yeah, Arizona and Hawaii.
And not – it's not – I think half of Indiana, right, or half of Illinois. Does that ring a bell to you? One state is split in half as far as I know.
I know what you're talking about. According to this article, this is still that Seattle Times article. As it stands, Arizona and Hawaii are the only states that don't observe daylight saving time. The territories of American Samoa, Guam, the Northern Mariana Islands, Puerto Rico, and U.S. Virgin Islands don't either. I'm just – there's probably something else going on with Central Time where – I know you're right, though. There is a state that doesn't change over, but that might be different – than not observing daylight saving, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I do like the kind of – aside from those outliers, I do like the consistency of mostly everybody kind of switching at the same time. I think that it will – listen, we can deal with it. We've dealt with much bigger issues as humanity. But I don't love the idea of having to do the math based on what state you're in, you know, and having a lot more complication if a bunch of different states – all across the country decided to opt in or opt out, you know?
Right. Well, I think we've covered this before. You know, part of it is that this came around because of agriculture. Mm-hmm. And we don't live in the same kind of agrarian society that we used to. Of course, we're still growing shitloads of crops, but it's like most of us aren't farmers. So, I mean, it's after 5 o'clock, Lemon. What am I, a farmer?
Mm-hmm.
So that part of it doesn't really apply as much anymore. Like and the far people that are working these giant agribusinesses, they can do that work in the darkness with their equipment in a way that wasn't possible when this stuff came around. Now, there are some implications for safety, according to this one guy. His name is Steve Calandrio. He's a professor at the University of Washington Law School. His whole thing seems to be trying to get daylight saving turned off. He said that there or I should say not, it's not turned off. I'm misstating that. He wants it permanently turned on. He wants us to always be pedaling to the metal on most light possible. So he says if we were to change over to just always getting – basically tilting the day so that as much of it as possible is in the light, he said it would save 400 lives per year because darkness in the late afternoon and evening – when more people are awake and moving around is more dangerous than dark in the morning when a significant percentage of the population is still asleep. He says year-round daylight could lead to an estimated 20% reduction in crime because he says it removes 1 hour from the preferred workday of criminals. He says eliminating the clock switch would also improve well-being simply by avoiding the disruption caused by adjusting to a new time twice a year. So and this is something interesting. On the shortest winter day for Seattle, the sun rises at around 8 a.m. and sets after 4 p.m., just after 4 p.m. If the switch to Pacific Daylight Time were to become permanent, the sun would rise at 9 a.m. and set at 5 p.m. Now, here is the thing. I think I'm overall in favor of this because I just – It does really make me feel a little bummed out when it's getting dark at 4 o'clock. That being said, dark at 5 o'clock is not a great look either, and light at 9 a.m. Now, old Luke would probably have not cared because I would have been waking up at around that time. But if I'm getting up at 5:30 in the morning, and it's not even going to be light for 4 hours. Hell nah. Like, that just is a lot of morning darkness. And there's also, I should point out, some people who are against this say kids walking to school in the morning, that's going to be more in the dark if you do this, and that's a little bit dangerous. I don't know. I'm probably overall in favor of it, but I am less gung-ho about it than I would have been if I wasn't getting up early.
Okay. So I just find these things so confusing, too. And I read this article. But yeah, so daylight saving means more darkness in the morning, more light in the evening. So that means if you didn't make the change, then the sun – did you say the sunrise would then start at 8 a.m. instead of 9 a.m. if you don't make the
change? On the shortest day of the year.
Okay.
With us – yeah, on the shortest day of the year, right now we would be – we're off daylight saving time during the winter. And so on that short day, it's getting light – at 8 in the morning, and it's getting dark at 4 p.m.
Okay.
And under the system of just having it permanently, it's called Pacific Standard Time, but it would just be we always leave we leave it on max sunlight setting. That would mean sunrise at 9 a.m. and sunset at 5 p.m.
I don't have a huge opinion about when it's light and when it's dark, which is why I thought this would be a great topic.
Even in the afternoon.
That stuff doesn't bother me as much as, like, for example, two people in my life, you and Genevieve, very, very driven by sunlight and being in the light. Like, I'm not driven by that stuff as much. I don't care. But the one thing that I can sort of see here is that it is easier to wake up in the morning if light is already coming through the windows. It just is. Like, it's just I hate waking up. Like, waking up is one of my least favorite things, which is probably just like that should be my motto, right? Like, what did my friend Paul always say? Wake up and lose. You know, like, waking up is just always a tough thing for me to do. But if it's already light outside, it's way easier than feeling like it's still dark out. I can just hit snooze again.
Yeah, there's something very, like, I don't know. I remember being a little kid and our family, we didn't fly very much. But my parents, God bless them, my mom is just the master of finding cheap airline tickets. Mm-hmm. And I remember being a little kid and we flew our whole family, which at that point wasn't seven kids. It was probably four kids. My mom flew our whole family to Philly for Christmas for this extended trip. I think the total cost was for the whole family, Andrew, was under $300.
Wow.
Because it was like this was some airline that I want to say TWA or like some airline that doesn't even exist anymore had a deal that was buy one, get one free. And then kids flew free under the age of two. And I think my mom bought a ticket, so my dad's ticket was free. And then we just kind of, you know, she just said, like, you know, pretend you're two. I'm probably like six at the time or something. So it was just like I would have been a nightmare to fly with us. Maybe they had to buy a ticket for me or something. But there was multiple babies on multiple laps. Like, it was like the – that whole thing where somebody doesn't buy a ticket for their kid, but their kid is like kind of too old to not have a seat and the kid's all over the place. The kid ends up like just roaming the aisles and stuff. We did that. And one of my main takeaways, one of my main memories of the trip is my parents waking me up in the middle of the night as a little kid and just being like dead asleep and then being so confused because it's like I look outside and it's dark. And, like, it's just so unnatural to wake up when it's still dark outside. So to the degree that there would be more of that, I kind of think that that's not a great outcome. But, man, the light, you're right, dude. I almost have the opposite problem of you, Andrew, which is I'm not saying it's a problem that you don't care about the sunlight, but I almost feel beholden to it in this way. Yesterday, after we were done with our show and after I was done doing a bunch of other stuff I had to do and I'd taken Rudy out for a walk and stuff, I get back home and it's like 5 o'clock and I got some food out of the refrigerator and it was like it's dinner time. Like it's time for me to start and I go to bed kind of early now. Like I go to bed at like 9 sometimes because I'm just tired by then. Well, it was a beautiful sunset. It was a beautiful evening here in the Bay City. And it was the time of night where it was time for me to pull the shades in the TV room, start watching All In with Chris Hayes, have my dinner, cuddle up with the pets. Like, it was time to wind it down for the night. But I couldn't do it because I felt like growing up in the Northwest, I have this ingrained thing, which is if it is a non-raining day and you are not outside or staring through a window at the outside, you have lost out on a limited time opportunity. Like, it is – because last night I was like, why can't I just be in this TV room watching TV – you know, at the end of my day and the beginning of my evening. This is normal behavior, but I felt like such a loser. And I had to have the shades closed because it was so bright that you couldn't see the TV because of the sunlight streaming in. I went and sat in the living room and stared at the sunset and the end of the light because honestly, every time it's nice out, I feel like this is the last time it's ever going to be nice out. Like, that is ingrained in me from growing up around here.
And is part of it also maybe a tiny bit of it tied into another thing that you and Genevieve share that I do not, which is FOMO. If it's light outside and you're trying to tuck in for the night, whether that means going to bed or doing your just kind of like evening ritual, but it's light outside, is there part of you that is almost like when you're a kid and you have to go to bed early and there's light outside and you think, but everybody else is still playing? Like, it's like almost an amorphous feeling like you're missing out on something other than just the sunset or the nice weather.
That's very possible. I'm sure it's probably connected. You know what's weird, though? I got no problem taking a nap in the middle of the
day. Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Like, it could be a gorgeous day. I mean, it's better if it's a crappy day because, of course, you know, snuggling up under the covers when it's just like a rainy and miserable outside. That's great because I'm getting this cue from the weather that it's okay for me to be indoors.
Yeah. Yeah.
But even if it's a nice day, I'll take a nap in the middle of the day. I'll listen to, like, it could be a Saturday. I can hear people mowing the lawn in the distance. I smell fresh cut grass. I'm looking out the window from our bedroom and all I can see is blue sky. And that does not give me a bad feeling. That gives Carrie like a very bad feeling.
Mm.
That's fine for some reason for me. It's this idea, like last night I honestly felt like intellectually I want to just like bed down for the night here. But I could emotionally, I could not do it. It wasn't even like it was fun. I was just kind of like, I have to go out and sit in the living room and look at the sunset and the pretty because I don't know. That's just what you do. You don't know how many of those are going to happen. The weather is shite a lot around here. So now but I wasn't doing it because I wanted to. I was doing it because I felt like I was compelled or I was forced to do it, which is a weird experience.
Yeah, sounds like it. I'll tell you what, man. If this ends up happening with all of these states between Washington, California, Idaho, and Oregon, I think that's going to be a pretty big deal. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't realize it has to be approved by Congress either until I read this piece.
Yeah, it would be. I mean, it feels like the kind of thing that everybody's got to do it. And like that's why, as mentioned in the article, that's why the fact that California has done it, they're a behemoth, you know. Like, it doesn't – like, no offense, peace and love to our Idaho listeners. But it's like Idaho could do it and we'd be like, okay, get back to me when a huge, very populous state does it. Well, California has now approved it. So – but it does feel like the kind of thing where you're going to need like – buy-in from a lot of states because it's going to be ultra confusing. In fact, probably if Congress approves California doing it, everybody else will have to get on board, right? Eventually?
You'd think so. Now, here's the real question here. Does this mean that California got more sunshine if it ends up happening?
Or less sunshine or the same amount of sunshine? I don't know. I was talking to my friend and yours, John Goodwin, a CBS producer, when we were down in California, and he's one of the fun-loving criminals. And he was saying that it depresses him to be in L.A. where it's sunny all the time. The weather in L.A. depresses him.
California got sunshine.
And I was like, oh, quite the opposite. I love that. I was weirdly okay with default setting of 80 degrees most of the year. Christmas morning, get up, go outside, 70 degrees, clear. Did not make me sad. I did not miss the changing of the seasons at all.
I don't know if I would use the word depressed, but it made me, I think it added a level of anxiety to everything for me. I think it did make me more anxious, especially because I was there during an anxious time, starting a new show, having a new job and all of these things, and not being able to just kind of, you know, walk home or walk to lunch or whatever under some cloud cover every now and then. It really did. It ratcheted up my anxiety levels pretty bad. I'm not saying that I couldn't live there again or that I won't live there again. I mean, all indications are that I think Vives and I probably will live in Southern California again, probably at some point. We don't have any immediate plans, I can handle
I'll keep
that.
Nora on speed dial just in case.
Wait, hold on. We're not in the same place now. Wait, why?
Oh yeah, good point. All right, fine.
You're rehired, Bow Wow. Anyway, so I understand where John's coming from. And
don't
actually,
say funny things when I just take a sip of coffee.
It makes me feel good to know that because I sort of feel like when I say that kind of stuff, when I say that I did not like the weather in L.A. I know a lot of people think I'm just trying to be extra, sort of, or like a 90s
extra goth,
goth grunge kid, or just different or anything. And it's truly, I mean, different people are different, you know, and these things affect you in different ways.
Totally. Let's talk about Hildy Kate Lasak. She is this 12-year-old who has started a newspaper, started this a while ago, called the Orange Street News, where she lives in Arizona. And this I forget the town is called Patagonia, by the way. I can't remember how it was that she originally came into our awareness. It was something when she was younger. When she was about 9 years old, she was writing news, and it was making someone upset.
I'm pretty sure she broke the news of a murder. I think that's when she got in the headlines.
So she's back in the news because she's been doing a bunch of reporting around the border, which is amazing to me. So she went down to the border, and she's basically put up this YouTube video via the Orange Street News website of her basically crossing the border, to just kind of like, if people are trying to wrap their mind around the border and if it's easy to cross or hard to cross or whatever. She's been down there doing some reporting. Well, it apparently ran afoul of the, like, we'll just say he's the police chief of the area. I think his technical term is sheriff, but he's the guy who's like in charge of law enforcement. His name's Joseph Patterson. He threatened to throw her in juvenile jail. And then he falsely claimed it would be illegal for her to film him and publish it on the internet. She was undeterred. This is because he stopped her once and said, you should not go down near where this mountain lion has been reported because it's dangerous. She, according to the police guy, she said she was going to her friend's house on her bike. But then when the police left, she left her friend's house and rode over to where the mountain lion was had been reported so she could report on the mountain lion. It's so funny. It's very, I guess, Nancy Drew. It's funny that she's riding a bike to these things to me.
Yeah.
And it's funny that it involves her being at her friend's house and the police like being like, you said you were going to be at your friend's house, but then you left. And she's like, my friend lives right next to where the mountain lion is. Like this interaction between the two of them that she videotaped. Let me just play a little bit of the tape.
You stopped me earlier.
So this is like he already had kind of reprimanded her, the police chief did. By the way, he's had the city has apologized for this guy's behavior. Which is sort of not wildly – he's not like – he's not being the worst. He's just doesn't like that she's – I think he thinks in his mind that he's looking out for her. But he's just kind of – you know, he's abridging her free speech, and he's saying something that's not legally backed, which is you can't put this videotape on the internet because there's no reasonable expectation of privacy for him, and he's a – law enforcement officers out on the street. If she videotapes him, she's allowed to put it on the internet. Anyway, so this is Hildy Lasak. I think that's how you say her name. Lisick. Going up and talking to this police officer again after he already kind of reprimanded her once.
And you said that I could be thrown in juvie. What exactly am I doing that's illegal?
So, when I left the office, you were over there talking and you quickly. You taping me? You can tape me.
Okay.
Now, I want to mention, sorry, the video is a little hard to hear because I have seen it with subtitles. She's sitting on her mountain bike and she's videotaping this on her phone. And the shot goes back and forth between the police chief's face and the handlebars of her mountain bike as she's talking to him, which, again, is just a delightful touch.
But what I'm going to tell you is if you put my face on the internet, it's against the law in Arizona, okay? So I'm not giving you permission to use my picture or my face on the internet. You understand all that?
I understand that.
Okay. So when you saw us leave, you quickly left the boy that you were with. And you...
Sorry, don't worry about all this stuff. This is just boring whatever. But it just gets to the point where what I was fascinated by was how she just had the presence of mind to keep asking, well, what am I doing that's illegal? Like I would confrontational, you know, basically disrespectful of authority kid that I was, in a million years I would have never stood my ground with the police chief of the town I lived in. And she totally does in a way that's completely appropriate.
Follow us down to 320 Roadrunner. And when we came back out, because we had to go somewhere else for an urgent call, you followed me again.
Yeah, and how is that illegal?
So don't follow law enforcement, because you already came in and told me you were a reporter.
Yeah, and I...
And I don't want you to get hurt.
I understand.
I'm looking out for your safety.
Okay.
Okay? The area you were in is where we're dealing with the mountain lion.
The mountain lion?
Yeah.
Okay, and...
Okay?
All right, but what exactly... I understand that you're concerned about safety, but what exactly am I doing?
I gave you a direct order. I gave you a lawful order, and if you disobey a law enforcement officer, you can lie to your mother, you can lie to your father, you can lie to your priest. You can't lie to a law enforcement officer. You understand that? So actually lying to me and saying you were going to your friend's house wasn't acceptable.
No, I didn't say
that. You actually lied.
My friend lives right there.
If you want,
you can knock on the door.
When you saw us leave, you turned around, you didn't even make it to your friend's house. You were seeing where we were going.
Yeah, I wasn't going to my
friend's house. Well, thank you very much. You have a great day. I'll be getting a hold of your parents.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Anyway, he says he's going to talk to her parents. Her parents, as you might imagine, were like they were not on the side of law enforcement because their kid is obviously has the right to be riding her bike around the town and reporting on stories if she wants to. I know that that audio is a little rough to listen to, but like I just watched that video like two times in a row because I just can't believe how poised this kid is. Like, it gives me great hope for the future, at least of Patagonia, Arizona. And I also think what's cool about this story is that, you know, we talked about this young woman, I don't know, a few years ago when she made the news the first time. And she got all this attention, and I assume she probably went on Ellen and all that. And then she could have just called it good. A 9-year-old Luke Burbank, would have achieved the goal. Oh, I got a bunch of attention from everyone. I'm retiring the Luke Burbank news or whatever. Or now I'm just going to bask in the glow of my media fame. But she just like gets back home and goes back to just doing reporting, literally just riding her bike around, reporting on the border, reporting on mountain lions. Like, I love that this kid seems like she's really in this for the right reason.
Yeah. I hate this kid. No, that's not true. I feel like I haven't said anything interesting on the show so far today, so I'm trying to be interesting. I did want to mention that I think her dad, I want to say, is a journalist as well. And
yeah.
So I mean, the poise that you discuss when she's talking to this police officer, because like I could see myself saying to a cop, even when I was young, like, what am I doing illegal? You know, but I wouldn't
really
say it in, I maybe not this young, but I, there are like this listening to this, cop talk, like really triggers me. And I know that there are so many good police officers and that honestly, I have this problem in my brain that I know intellectually that putting on a uniform and going out there every day is different than anything I will ever do. And I truly do appreciate the job. However, whenever I hear the condescending tone of a police officer, like in this, especially when they're saying stuff that is certifiably untrue, but people believe them or feel like they have to believe them because they are wearing a badge, infuriates me. And that goes back for a really long time. I remember just getting kicked out of parks for doing nothing but having long hair and a guitar when I was in high school. And that's not a joke.
I really wish I could have seen that.
Oh, God.
I'm not saying that was fair to you, but
right.
God, long-haired Andy being kicked out of a park for playing his Doors music
right.
Too late at night. That would have been a sight to behold.
And the thing is,
not to minimize your experience.
Yeah, right. And again, I'm not trying to. Hey, listen, I'm a white dude in America. Everything turned out okay, you know. But I just mean that, like, from a pretty early age, I had a real distaste for this sort of authoritarian sort of approach that some police officers take, and especially when it's just clear that they're lying to you, but you can't do anything about it because then. If you try to, I mean, they could, if you try to become too argumentative, they can, again, just sort of say, well, then you were, I don't know, they'll find
resisting,
a way to, yeah.
Disobeying to a lawful order.
Pin something
yeah,
on
it's
you.
It's the game is rigged.
Yes. And I'm not saying everybody does it, but everybody can do it essentially and get away with it if you're wearing a badge. So anyway, that's all the baggage that I bring to this. And what I'm impressed with is not just her asking the questions, but the way that she does it. And I mentioned her parents. I like I said, I think her dad's the journalist. I don't know what her mom does, but like I just sort of like every sentence she says, I sort of feel like I can hear the lessons that her parents probably explicitly taught her, you know, the fact that she's a journalist and that her parent is a journalist. Clearly they're at home having conversations about, well, you can do this and always be respectful. And that's the difference between being a punk ass like me and being a kid who's actually like kind of committed to something. And like when he tells her, it's illegal for you to put my face on the internet. And she just says, okay, I understand. And my guess is in the moment, she might know or certainly think that doesn't scan. That sounds like bullshit to me. But she doesn't argue that point with him there because there's no point in it. If she comes back and consults with an adult, maybe it's her dad, the journalist, maybe it's somebody else, maybe it's just the internet, and she reads the bylaws for the state and she says, is there a difference between I said bylaws. I think I meant laws, but I was just trying to sound smart. She reads the state statutes and realizes, okay, nope, I can put this on the internet, and then she does. And therefore, she doesn't get like – she doesn't trip over her own actions trying to argue this one fine point with him and just – and being sure. respectful and even saying, okay, goodbye at the end and just being like – I'm a journalist. This will all go out there and I will tell my story. And the best way I can do this is by staying calm in the moment. I mean, it's something that I don't have now and I am just so impressed right. with.
Just to clarify, by the way, I knew something was a little off about my perception of the story. She's from a town called Sullins Grove, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. That's where the Orange Street News started. And I don't know if she was in Arizona for vacation, if it was a reporting trip that she went on with presumably her parents.
The article but actually even down in says that it's unclear why she's in Arizona, right? It could be that maybe her dad's on a reporting mission. If who knows what her dad reports to, you know?
Right. So that's the other thing is this guy that's in Patagonia, Arizona, he's probably like – I'm not defending him, by the way, but he's probably like – I would imagine that the police in Sullins Grove at this point are like, well, we're going to have to deal with Hildy because she's legally allowed to do this.
Right.
They're probably more used to it. He is like, WTF, there's this kid riding her bike around my random Arizona town, reporting from the border, trying to cover the mountain lion story. And he's thinking he can just like bamboozle her, and she is not to be bamboozled. I'll mention a couple of other things about Hildy. I just started following her on Twitter. Although that's a dangerous game because she has 13,300 followers. I have 13,400 followers. If she eclipses me, my life has no meaning because now, I mean, that's honestly about all I have. And I can't have this 12-year-old with more Twitter followers than me. The other thing that's great is in her Twitter feed, she has a tweet from a couple days ago. It starts with all caps, not news. So she's denoting this tweet to not be news. My new book comes out tomorrow. I'm very proud of this one. The first few books I've received a lot of help. This one I actually wrote. If anyone, and it's called Thief Strikes, a Branches book, Hildy Cracks the Case, number 6. And then she adds on the tweet, if anyone doesn't have the money and would like one, I have free author copies. PM me.
Oh, my God.
Come on.
Come on.
I mean, I can't even handle how great this kid is.
I know.
Young person.
Yeah. How old is she now? She's 12 years old now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. She's written a book, something I can't seem to pull off as an adult with like a car and money to buy coffee in coffee shops where I would presumably sit and write the book. Meanwhile, she's writing books. If you don't have the money for the book, she's giving you the book. She's reporting from the border. She is absolutely living her best and most engaged life. And really, the rest of us should shirk away in shame.
And also, she knows – this is one thing that I meant to say before that I also am impressed with is she knows – and again, I'm assuming possibly with some guidance from folks in her life, she knows exactly like – how to be respectful and truthful and push the envelope as far as the story goes, but then also make sure that she's not kind of abusing her position. Like she tweeted out a bunch. Like this guy said, I'm not giving you permission to put my face on the internet, so it would be illegal if you did that. That's not true. She knows that, so she posts the video online. However, I think the article says there is a statute that says, you know, you cannot like be publishing private information, like maybe where a police officer lives or something like that, or certainly if they're not wearing the uniform. You know, there are rules about that protect the privacy of citizens, including, you know, people who might
want to harass the cops. You know, there are laws to prevent people from harassing an off-duty officer. So she, I believe, tweeted out several things saying, like, because I think somebody did post his address at some, or no, his phone number at some point, and she sent out tweets saying, listen, please do not harass this man. Please do not tweet that out, right, and do not call this guy. That is not what we're doing here. Again, just, I don't know, man. She's just doing it right.
Yeah, amazing. Really cool young person. So that's the update on what Hildy is up to. And let's do some emails.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it here. This is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
Maybe more accurately, let's do some V-mails.
Let's
because you texted me last night, Andrew, and you were like, we got some good ones.
Yeah, I went through the voicemails last night. I hadn't done it in an entire month, so my apologies. So if you had called in about something very specific to something we had talked about on the show a month ago or a few weeks ago, it's probably not worth going back to those now. However, Luke, I have three files in front of me. One is voicemail parking mystery. One is voicemail mystery smell. And the other one is voicemail trash mystery. I would like to play all three of them if we have time. Which mystery would you like to hear first? Trash, smell, or parking? Smell. Okay.
Smell.
I believe this one comes from Karen.
Hi, guys. This is Karen in Kenmore. I have a smell story that I thought you guys might appreciate. It was a couple years ago, and I started smelling this really, really rotten kind of decay, death smell when I walked into the house. The smell was pretty faint, so I suspected it was coming from the basement. We have a mother-in-law kitchen in the basement, and I suspected it was coming from that room. And some days it was worse than others, and some days, you know, it was almost non-existent. And I seemed to be the one who was smelling it the most, so I thought I might be losing my mind. And I came down into the basement, and I would pour bleach down the drain or boiling water. I was getting ready to take the pipes apart, trying to get to the source of the smell. And then one day I came downstairs, and I was just losing my mind. I thought I was going to go crazy, and I was going to either burn down the house, just trying to get rid of the smell, if that's what it took. So I came downstairs, and there was a bunch of stuff lined up against the wall because we used to foster kittens in this room. And so I was moving stuff away from the wall, and I had moved like a cat scratching post and a bag of cat litter away from the wall. And what was behind it was a Costco 3-pack of chicken breasts that had been there for probably 6 months, rotting.
Oh.
It was absolutely disgusting, but it was the best to find the source of the smell.
Oh my God.
And to get it out
so
of here
jealous.
And to bleach the shit out of this room. Anyway, I thought you'd appreciate that story. Power
I do.
Out. Bye.
Oh my God.
Karen might be my new
God,
favorite
that's
person.
That's a great call. I know exactly what she's saying. And I'm super jealous because we continue to have Carrie last night. Or the other night decided, she goes, it's just a ghost. We just have a ghost that lives in our laundry room, and it has it farts a lot or something, because there makes no sense. By the way, for those who missed that kind of week of the show where we're having mystery smells in our laundry room, I thought it was our dryer, our old dryer, and so we bought a new dryer. And after I cleaned out all the ducting and everything, so there's just, it's still, when you run the new dryer, there is an odd smell, even when the items that are being put in the dryer are not wet. So like a blanket that the dog will lay on the couch, if you throw that in the dryer and run the dryer for a little while, it will, the static will pull most of the dog hair off of it. So we'll do that sometimes. And you go in there and it stinks. Not as bad as it used to, but it does smell weird. I cannot for the life of me figure out what that could be, because there's no moisture in the equation.
Could it be a dead animal in the walls, like a little mole or something? Because I thought that's where Karen's story was going when she mentioned the cat
I did
room.
Too. That's totally what I assumed. Could it be some Costco chicken breast in the wall?
Yeah.
I've looked through and I've bought a tool and I cleaned out the vent that goes to the outside of the house. So there's no dead animal in there. I guess the idea would be an animal somehow died in the wall, and when we run the dryer, it vibrates the animal's carcass?
Or it heats up.
Heats up. I mean, it has to be related to heat. You had mentioned something about the idea of it maybe being in the floor under the dryer.
Yeah, that's true, too. Yeah, or just like a kind of a moisture thing there.
I mean, it's real. I guess what I could do is go in the attic above the dryer. Maybe there's something up. Maybe there's something that died up there, and because there's a ceiling above where the dryer is, and maybe when we run the dryer, it's just the most bizarre thing.
All right.
So anyway, I'm extremely jealous of the caller and her ability to get to the root of the problem. That's almost worth having a rotten stench in your house for 6 months. The satisfaction of finding it.
You remember my mystery smell story? I know I've told it before on the show, but you remember I'll tell a very brief version. I was a kid. We grew up out in the country, of course, and it was a rare situation where my mom had to leave us with a babysitter in the middle of the day. She must have had to go somewhere kids couldn't go. And I was outside with my sister and the babysitter. We're all just running around, whatever, playing. Who knows what we were doing that day. And then I got this really, really heavy whiff of, like, manure, which was not uncommon living out in the country. Like, farmers would, you know, kind of spread their fields, and then you would just smell it really strong for a day. But it was
smells
so,
like money, right?
Yeah. And, it smelled super intense to me, and you know, the babysitter and my sister kind of every now and then would say, I smell it a little bit, but you're overreacting. And then I went inside to the little garage area, and I was like, oh my god, it's worse in here. And I'm just like gagging in the little garage area, and they're looking at me like I'm crazy, until one of them realized that I had duck shit in my hair, because I was playing underneath the picnic table, and just, you know, being a squirmy little kid, I think I was like hooking my legs up on the seat of the picnic table and spinning my head in the ground, and that was a place where our ducks like to hang out. And I smeared duck poo all in my hair, which is why I could not escape the smell.
Now, I would imagine duck poop is less stinky than dog poop. I don't know why. I think it has to do with what they eat. Do ducks eat like small living organisms? I don't actually know what a duck's. I mean,
were you not listening to yesterday's show? They eat socks. They kept eating Weird Al's socks.
Well, then that shouldn't smell bad.
No, that's a good point. Hey, listen, I have two more mysteries. I'd love to play them for you. These, right. Unfortunately, okay. We don't have solutions to. So I'm going to put a call out here to ask these listeners to call back and let us know how things worked out. Because this first one regarding trash, I mean, this is right in my wheelhouse, a trash mystery. Mm-hmm. This is from January 23rd, over a month ago. So we might have some sort of resolution. I don't know.
Hey, dummies. It's Jennifer here in the Bryant neighborhood, and I have a Seattle trash issue. So I took out our trash and recycling and yard waste last night. I have a kind of a short, squatty can for the trash and took it out about 6:30. Got up this morning, a little bit of a humble break at 5 o'clock to work out.
All right.
Yep. And I see the cover to my garbage can in the middle of the street. I'm like, eh, it was a little windy last night. Must have blown off. Turn around. Garbage can's gone. I thought, well, that's kind of weird, but maybe someone just, you know, I don't know, they needed a squat little bucket, so they took it. But the weird thing is they also took the trash. The trash is nowhere to be found. It's not anywhere else on the street. It's not across the street. It doesn't think it hoisted over my fence back into my yard. I checked the yard waste bin and the recycling bin, and it's gone. So who, number one, would steal just the bottom half of a trash can, and then two, well, we'll take the trash. Anyway, food for thought. We're out.
I don't have a name on that listener, but call back. Let us know. Did you ever find your trash can?
I already know what's up with this. She's under surveillance from the feds.
Hmm. And are they hiding in the trash can?
They're taking her trash. Through her trash at Quantico, probably. Right. They're shipping the trash to Virginia. It's right now. It's spread out on a huge table. Iced tea is there, and also for some reason, Mark Harmon, everybody from the NCIS SVU verse, and they're going through her receipts and her envelopes. And I mean, it's only a matter of time before they figure out what she's been up to, is listening to TBTL, which currently. And maybe only for a little while longer. Still legal. Thank you very much, the feds.
They're like, this woman claims that she's been going to the gym at 5 a.m. But is it true? I have a trash mystery for you, but
Is it a mystery about trash, or is it just a lousy mystery?
It's just a lousy mystery. Can't find my pen. Oh, you left one of your fancy pens over here, by the way. If you're missing one, I have it. I have a lot of trash anxiety, as you know, which is why I think this listener left this. And I had a lot of trash anxiety going into this vacation, this Hawaiian vacation, because of the snowstorms in Seattle. We missed trash pickup 2 weeks in a row, including one recycle day, which only happens once every 2 weeks anyway. And so I was really concerned about coming home to a bunch of trash. I decided I was just going to leave all the trash out on the curb. Actually, our trash can was empty, but I left the recycling and the compost out on the curb, even on the busy street. And I just sent a note to our landlords and property managers just saying, hey, I don't know if they're going to come to empty this stuff, but if they do and you see that it's empty, can you bring the bins back in for me? And they're like, yeah, no problem. And we also had our friend Nikki, who was coming here checking on our cats while we were gone. And Nikki, knowing my garbage anxiety, told us on the one day that, hey, they came and they took your compost, your yard waste bin, and that's empty, and it looks like your landlord brought the bin back in, but they still haven't touched the giant recycling bin. And that was the one I was especially nervous about because, again, it only happens once every 2 weeks. And this Monday, they were predicting more snow. That was like 2 days ago. The snow never came. But I was like, could I have to go like 6 weeks without having my recycling picked up? Nikki texts me on Friday while I'm in Ohio. Sorry, I don't know why I said it that way. I'm trying to distance myself
from
Congressman Jordan. Is that his name?
Jim Jordan.
Anyway, she's like, it's Friday. They haven't touched your recycling. I don't know, dude. You know, good luck, whatever. And then I come home the next day. Genevieve and I roll into town Saturday morning, and it's empty. The bin is – they've come and they've emptied our recycle bin, and somebody, one of my neighbors or the landlord or somebody, brought our bin back. But that was on a Saturday. Recycling is only supposed to happen on Mondays. Somebody emptied our recycling sometime between Friday night and Saturday morning. And I don't – like, it doesn't seem like a city truck would just be cruising around looking for stray recycling to pick up. I also, by the way, put a couple more bags in there, dragged it back out to the street 2 days later on Monday, the regular day, and they also emptied it then too. So I have no – I kept on, like, bugging Nikki. I'm like, did you do some sort of Miracle Max thing here? Are you trying to pay it forward? Did you, like, take this to the dump? She says she did not. I also don't think she would have a car that would be capable of doing that. So – I don't know, man. It's the miracle on trash.
Is it possible it was a listener?
That would be amazing. That would be something. Okay.
I mean, like, you can't rule it out.
Yeah,
I have. That's true. This is just because this is we're in garbage time now.
Yeah.
God, that's actually such a good
I know.
It's actually such an apt reference, too, because like in basketball, or really any sporting event, but it's, I think, most associated with basketball, they call it garbage time, mm-hmm. right? It's like the game's been decided, and we're just playing it out. We're just in garbage time now.
And Katie Nolan so isn't kind of using it anymore, I don't think. That was my favorite name of a sports show ever, Garbage Time with Katie Nolan.
I saw her once in a bar in New York having dinner or drinks with her friends. I was texting you and Steve, you and Stu furiously, like, I'm in a bar with Katie Nolan.
Yeah.
And I left them alone because they didn't need my energy in their life. But I thought that show was great. I think she's a real talent,
she's
too.
So
but
cool.
Anyway, we're in garbage time and we're talking about garbage. So since we're doing that, I'll just mention that I have a missing envelope that I had to. So our garbage, because of the snow and because I was out of town, and just to be honest, it's not, Carrie is not usually the wheeler of the garbage can down the long driveway. So I think we went like 3 weeks, maybe four, almost a month, never got the garbage emptied. And over that time, it, you know, lots in there. And then also I pick up the dog's poop and put those in bags. And some of the bags are biodegradable. And so those ones I think can throw in the yard waste, but I'm not sure if all of them are. And so I mail in my travel expenses to Wait, Don't Tell Me. And it's like, it'll be like for five trips. And it's kind of a hassle. I have to find all these old Lyft receipts and all this stuff. So I got it back in the mail the other day. I was like, I wonder why they never paid that. It was because I guess they moved. And so somehow it went to the wrong address. It was returned to sender, that being me, this big, thick envelope full of all these receipts I had printed out. And I was like, okay, well, I got to like figure this out and remail this. And then the envelope went missing. And that meant that the other day I had to dig through our entire garbage can like an FBI agent. And that included like conservatively 25 mostly sealed bags of Rudy's poop and coffee grounds and just everything. And I didn't find the envelope. It was a total waste of time.
Okay. Just got some questions here. So you still haven't found the envelope. Sure. Do you have any clue? Like it's just gone? Oh, Jesus. Where did you do this?
I have one more place I'm going to look. One more place I'm going to look, which is in – this is getting ever more specific and boring. But I have this whole ritual – because our mailbox is like out on the street, which is kind of far away from our house. So I will, when I'm driving home, I will pull over to where the mailbox is. I try to do it so that I don't even have to get out of the car, but that's kind of tricky because there's a few mailboxes. I don't want to hit them because they're all on the same thing that's in like buried in the ground or on the same post. So I try to ease up to them and then I unlock the mailbox. It's locking. And then I get our mail out and then it's 99% of our mail is just casinos I've been to inviting me to their re-inviting me to their rewards club. And then like the alumni magazine from the University of Washington that thinks my last name is my ex-wife's last name. And other such important delights. So usually what I do is while I'm sitting there in the car, I throw all of the junk mail on the floor of the passenger side of the Toyota. And then the one or two possibly important bills, checks, you name it, those stay on the seat. This is my system, Andrew. I don't know when I developed it, but this is the system. And I can even go maybe 2 or 3 days doing this until eventually there's like a ton of junk mail on the floor of the passenger side of the Toyota. And then at some point when I get in the car, usually with Rudy, I back the car up around to where our garbage cans are on the side of our house, and then I dump all that junk mail. And I thought that maybe – and then the mail that I actually want to read comes inside and goes in this special counter in our kitchen. The envelope in question is not on the special counter, and as we've learned through some forensic work, it's also not in the garbage can. So I don't know where it is.
Where did you kind of go rifling through your garbage? Did you just do it at the end of the street, or did you say, okay,
no,
I got to get in
the semi-privacy of our side of our house? Yes, I did not want to be
outdoors.
I did not want to be airing my dirty garbage in front of Cliff and Beverly.
Did you decide
the driveway neighbors?
Did you kind of say, okay, we got to do this. I'm just going to do it, and then kind of like dump it all out and spread it out, almost like that forensic scene that you're pointing out? Or were you more hopeful and thought like, I'll just open this first bag on top and go through, and then like you just find yourself kind of digging through the actual can?
Yeah, door number two.
That's right.
I was hoping that I would just I would. Well, the thing is, I it wasn't going to be in a garbage in a sealed bag because that wouldn't we wouldn't have thrown I wouldn't have thrown paper into the garbage can and then tied up the bag. So I knew it wasn't in any of the like bags of garbage. So it would have been somewhere just loose in there. And I thought I knew where it would be. And I found all the junk mail that I had thrown out, and it was not in the junk mail unless it slid down into the way bottom. So I just have had to – it's either going to turn up somewhere in the Toyota like it slipped down in some side crack.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, speaking of – or it's gone and I just have to redo it and that's okay. But I ain't going back in that garbage can is what I'm trying to say.
Did you wear gloves?
I don't care what's in there. I did wear gloves. I wore some like work gloves that my mother-in-law got me for Christmas from Oliver and Hammer in Cedro Woolley, Washington. Let me just update you quickly. I know you have one more mystery, Andrew, but let me update you quickly on a couple of things. One, remember how I lost my Apple Watch somewhere in the house and the battery died and I couldn't find it?
Oh, yeah.
And I said, I'm going to give it time. And then I didn't give it a lot of time. I gave it like a month or two. And then when I got to Arizona – or sorry, I keep calling it Arizona because that's where I think the desert is. When I got to California, I was like – I just – on the plane, honestly, flying from Seattle to Palm Springs, I was like, I got a yen. I got a bee in my bonnet. I got a burr under my saddle, and it was, I really want to get another watch. So when I'm walking, hiking, jogging in Joshua Tree, I will have a accurate record of it. Was it really necessary? No, but it was enough – to convince my brain that I should figure out if there's an Apple store in Palm Springs, which there kind of is and kind of isn't. It's actually in Palm Desert. I drove out to the Palm Desert Apple store. I mentioned this on the shows last week, Andrew, but you weren't around for that. The people that work at the Apple store in Palm Desert, California, average age 74.
Oh, really?
Average amount of knowledge about Apple Watches, 0. The woman literally said to me, I was like asking about battery life on the particular watch I was looking at because it has a larger screen. And I said, does this have, what's the battery life on this? And she goes, I don't know. What have you heard?
were you on a prank show?
It was honestly like I was being punked by these retirees who have taken up a job at the Apple store in Palm Desert as a way to pass the time.
Oh my
Nobody
God.
Nobody knew anything about this. At all. Then she passed me on to a only slightly younger male who I asked him explicitly and directly, hey, will all of my data and also, you know, my information and will my – I have the old watch I had the phone set up on there. So if I were jogging and I keeled over, I could conceivably use it to call 911. He said, yeah, it'll all transfer over. So I get the new watch, and at some point I had occasion to try to use the phone function on my watch. This is like 2 or 3 days ago. I didn't have my phone with me. And I go, and it's like I go to try the thing, and it goes, no cellular service activated. And I just went, Apple Store, like to the heavens, because every piece of information these people gave me was totally wrong. So anyway, I get home, and then the other night I'm looking for my phone, and I'm digging around in the couch cushions, and what do I find but my old Apple Watch, which only was able to resurface to my life as soon as I finally broke down and bought a new one. But I'm happy to report I was still within the window where I could bring the new one back.
Oh, nice.
So I did. I'm back to my original little watch, and all's well in Burbank Springs.
What about the other mystery in TBTL land that we should have talked about earlier? Have we heard back? I assume we have not heard back from the management of Weird Al Yankovic after yesterday's show.
Hold on. I'm checking my inbox, and I'm finding... I don't know if it's some kind of semaphore or code, SOS of some kind.
You know,
no,
what,
those crickets would indicate that I have yet to hear back from Jay of Weird Al Yankovic Management, which means one of a couple possible things. One, he is just behind on checking his emails. Two, my subject line was too general and he just thought it was spam. Mm. Three, he read it and he was like, this is weird. I don't really want to take the mental energy and the time to actually respond to this appropriately. I'll respond to it later, which means it could happen at a later point or never. What do you think is the most likely scenario?
I kind of like the last one. I like that he saw it, maybe
Didn't
saw it on his phone.
You like the last
one? No, I'm sorry, the second to last one, that maybe he saw it on his phone. He's like, oh, that's kind of interesting. I'll get to this later, and maybe he's planning on it. Or another option that I'll put out there, is there any chance he accidentally sent it to... I know this seems weird, but is there any chance he sent it to my... Let me check my inbox here.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Nope, just the sound of a typewriter in there. I don't know. You played the crickets, and I wanted
Yoda.
To play, too.
I get it. What's our last mystery?
This is a parking mystery. Again, I don't think I have a name for this.
Hey. Oh, I started talking too soon. Hey.
Oh, so you know, usually I edit these things, and I just downloaded these from... Google Voice yesterday, and I forgot to edit them. I would have cut that out. I'm not trying to embarrass this listener, but
I will say that
is something that happens almost all the time. There must be something about our outgoing message, because I always hear people say this. Hey, dummies. Like, something is happening where they think it's time to talk, and then it beeps again or something like that. We have so many false starts.
I like it. It's real, like, Radio Lab.
Wait, you're listening...
Yeah, I like it. It's like a little piece of...
You're right.
It's cool. We're deconstructing the whole thing.
Maybe I should stop editing things so much. All right, let's hear it from the beginning.
Yeah.
Hey. Oh, I started talking too soon. Hey. So I'm having a parking dilemma, and I think it just took a turn for the weird. I live in an apartment complex, like a small one, and there's this white car that recently showed up, and it's parking in this red... no park zone, and doesn't really affect me, just a little bit, because when you pull out of the cross street, it kind of blocks the view of the other cars coming down, so it does make it a little bit unsafe, but it's really just rude. It's clearly a red no parking area, so I started to report it to the parking enforcement, and I report it pretty much every weekday that I see it there, and they've been responsive. They've sent me responses saying, oh, we gave them a citation, we gave them a ticket, we're marking their tires, tracking their movement, but the thing is, they move and they come back and they keep parking there and they don't care. Apparently they don't care. I left them a note that was very nice about a week ago.
I'm going to pause it here for just 1 second and say, one of the reasons I love this so much is that it's unapologetically none of her business, but she is getting in the business. She says it doesn't really affect her hardly at all, but she looks down apparently from her window and sees this asshole parking, and it's just driving her nuts. I love that. I can associate with that.
As the person who's commonly the asshole in the situation, I see this whole thing from a slightly different perspective. Like, what if – well, I don't know. Maybe this is revealed later on in the voicemail, but I mean – it's just the fact that a car is parked in a no parking spot. Not just the fact. I get why that would be annoying. But what if it's like that person is a hospice worker and they're helping someone who's – I'm trying to think of just the most like impossible to be mad at scenario.
Right.
What if – like what if there's a – it's that kind of thing where it's like you never know what else has been going on for someone during their day. And I'm really bad at this. But like if somebody – cuts you off in traffic or is honking at you or rude to you in the store, and it's just – you're like – you don't know. They might have just gotten the news that their parents are terminal or something. You know, you just don't know where anyone else is at. I don't think that's really the story with this car, but I think it's funny that the listener is again, admittedly – kind of just – it just bothers her.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, now this person is an asshole to you. You guys are two peas in a pod, you and this listener.
I'm going to tell my own story in the middle of this voicemail, and then we'll go back to her parking mystery because we're only about halfway through this one. But know this. I have wanted to tell this. This is such a good TVTL story, but I haven't told it because it involves somebody that you and I both know. And this is somebody that you and I both know kind of through TBTL. And it's somebody who is a personal friend. But when I met him a couple of years ago for the very first time, we met – I'm trying to take out the details of the story just to not give it away. But we met really briefly. We met at a coffee shop. We had a cup of coffee together. And maybe we were in there for, I'm going to say – 15 minutes tops. It was a pretty quick meeting. And then when it was time to leave, we leave the coffee shop, and he gets into his car, which he parked in a turning lane. Did I tell you that? Have I told you this story before? Did I tell you on the air or off? I must have told you
that part.
Off,
I can't remember
because I don't think I've told this before. And I was just like, I mean, you know, I love this guy, and I had just met him at the moment, though. But it was just kind of like it was such cognitive dissonance. I'm just like, oh, you know, just had a nice cup of coffee, blah blah. And then I just see, oh wait, you just park in turning lanes? You just extended the parking curb into the turning lane, and like you were just, like that whole time. Can you imagine if I had done that? What would be going through my brain that entire 15 minutes while we were having a cup of coffee together? Like I couldn't concentrate on anything but the fact that I was parked in a turning lane.
I guess the question would be how far into the turning lane. So when you say turning lane, it's that idea of where you're driving on an arterial. There are cars parked along the right side. But then there's a point at which you can't park anymore because if you're going to turn right, you need to be able to get over and get into the now what has been created as the rightmost lane.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if this car was parked literally at the so that you couldn't get in the right turning lane at all. Like you literally couldn't turn right from there because you were now blocked. That'd be one thing. If it was a smaller car and if it was just extending the parking strip of cars by a small car's distance and the flashers were on, I wouldn't think it was the best move, but I could see it happening. I could see myself doing it. Which were people able to turn right based on where this car was? Because you know what I mean? There's a cleared out zone. Was this person dominating the entire cleared out zone or just were they parked in front of a car and they were in a spot that really they shouldn't have been in?
It was egregious. Let me put it that way. Like, I don't know how long the turning lane is. Like, maybe if you're somebody who's at the front of the line of the red light, there's still room for you to get over and take your right-hand turn. But if you're two or three cars down, you should be able to take your right turn, but instead you have to wait there in the traffic. And that actually has implications. Like, that's how traffic starts to back up. Like, these things aren't designed by accident. They think about, okay, well, if a certain percentage of the cars are turning right here, then this is how you manage traffic flow. And I don't think the blinkers were on. I could be misremembering that. And I have no idea if this person will ever hear the story or not, and we can talk about it if they do. But anyway, back to this parking mistake. From this listener.
A note that was very nice about a week ago, hoping that would help. It didn't. I left another note last night that said, stop parking here. I'm watching you. Which maybe, I mean, it's not aggressive. I hope they didn't interpret it to be aggressive, but they need to stop parking there. And so this morning I saw them drive away with the note still on their windshield. I don't know if they didn't see it. It's this older guy, which makes me sometimes feel a little bit bad.
Hospice places can hire older people, for the record. It's possible.
Right. So I've never in my life left a note for somebody that says, please stop, I'm watching you. That just really gets me. But then also,
people have left you notes say that they stop watching me.
Yes,
so that's actually
stop watching me.
Very much a thing.
So this guy apparently gets in the car, and this is kind of a baller move from his perspective. He sees that somebody has left him a note. He probably can guess that it has something to do with the fact that he's parked in a red no parking zone, and he's just like, I'll just get in the car and drive away and leave the note there. I feel like I've done that before with notes on my car to like kind of in case somebody is watching to kind of give it like whatever, I don't care. But anyway, okay,
really?
So he drives away with
you live a much more exciting life than I do. I can't think of too many notes that have ever been left on my car, and if they have, it's like stop the presses, I'm reading this. I mean, I've gotten thousands of parking tickets in my life, but like a note, I wouldn't be able to contain myself. I'd be so curious.
Yeah, I don't want to bullshit you. I feel like I've done that before. I definitely have maybe thought if this happens, I will do that. Because that's kind of a good move to like kind of the person leaving the note on the off chance that they're watching. And in this case, she was watching because as she says, I'm watching you.
I mean, I saw them drive away with the note still on their windshield. I don't know if they didn't see it. It's this older guy, which makes me sometimes feel a little bit bad. But I got into my car to go to the store, and I saw that he had reparked there, and his head was down.
And I just got back. I was gone maybe 15 minutes. And there's a note on his windshield. And I think he left it for me. And I'm afraid to go get it. I think it's a trap. I really want to know what it says, though. I don't know if it's some justification for him parking there. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure it's for me. It's a different piece of paper folded up. And it's dry. So it's new. And I don't think anyone else has been leaving him notes. Yeah, I don't know what to do. That's it. Thanks.
That message was left.
It's a trap!
Akbar.
Weeks ago, I want to follow up, and I want to say, and I say this with all peace and love, because I got to say, I think I really like this listener, but she also may just be off her rocker. Like, she now thinks that this guy is leaving notes for her on his own car, which he might be.
Is this Jimmy Stewart? Is this Rear Window? What's going on?
Right. That's what it feels like.
Man, again, we're at a bit of a disadvantage here because we don't know what happened. I would love for this listener to call back in and update us. That's an interesting move by the parking offender to leave the note on his own car. But of course, where else would he leave it? Because he doesn't know which, like, apartment or office the caller is watching him from. He doesn't know what her car looks like. So I guess the only – he knows one thing. He knows that she goes to his car on a fairly regular basis.
And so he knows that she's watching him.
Yeah, and it worked in that if he was trying to get her attention with a note – like, if I – again, my curiosity – I'd be the first person to die in any horror movie I was in because – Mike, I'd be like, we got to find out what's in this shed.
Right.
You know, like I would be, if I were this listener, I would be like, I would maybe get a friend or someone to like start the car. Like, okay, have the car running, your car. And then I'm going to go down. I'm going to grab the note on my way to the running vehicle and then jump in and then floor it. And then we'll read the note three blocks away. If I thought it was a trap, I would still be compelled to read the note.
Whoa, you're on it. Can you task rabbit that? Task rabbit, you don't get to meet the person in person, right? But could you, is there like a Postmates something? Is there somebody that you could hire and just say, all I want you to do is walk to that car, read the note, leave the note, come back and report to me what the note said? Or maybe take a photo of it with your phone. That way she, because
that feels
he might
like you're
be
putting
watching
them
her.
In harm's way.
Well,
right, but then
they shouldn't have taken the
like
job,
basically...
Luke. They shouldn't have taken the job.
Can you walk across this field? There are some landmines in there.
Yeah, right.
You'll probably be fine. I just want to make sure. I am fascinated by this person, not the caller, although she is also fascinating to me, because as she said by her own admission, she's very self-aware about this. This is not negatively impacting her. Other than it is a violation of the rules, and that frustrates her.
She said that, right? There's a small implication where it kind of changes flow a little. Or she has to look a little bit harder when taking a right turn out of there or something. She said something like that in the voicemail, but I think by her own admission, that's not the problem here.
Right. It just feels like it's wrong. It's against the rules, and she wants people to follow the rules, and I get that. But again, I find this parking violator fascinating because, like, so also it sounds like this person has received tickets. Like, mm-hmm. She's called the parking people. So, like, how many tickets has this person received before they – how many tickets would they need to receive to change their behavior? Mm-hmm. How many notes would they need to receive? Mm-hmm. Either they are just, like, impervious to negative feedback and consequences. I mean, that is – look, I was a chronic illegal parker when I lived in Seattle because I was always late. I never thought ahead to where I was going to park. I never had the money to pay for parking, so I would try to sneak it. And like, I lived on First Hill where there was no parking. I worked in the Columbia Tower downtown. There was no parking. And I attended the University of Washington where there was like no parking, at least not parking that I felt like I could afford and that was close enough to the things I was trying to get to. So I was always getting parking tickets. But had I like parked in the same no parking spot, and not only am I getting tickets, but then people are leaving notes for me, even I would have been like, yeah, the H is O here. The heat is on. I can't do this anymore. How is this person not affected by all these notes and tickets? It's crazy.
I don't know. I don't know, man, but I love this story. If this listener could call back, I don't think I have your name.
Please.
Could you call back and give us an update? We'd really like one. I don't know. Maybe we can get both of them on the show. I don't know. Maybe
if
some sort of mediation.
If that guy is ever carrying a full can of garbage to the car that's illegally parked, we may have solved both mystery calls.
Wow.
Like in once.
That hadn't even occurred to me. You know what does occur to me now is that I didn't write down any show titles, my bud.
I felt, you know, when I listened back to yesterday's show, which is rare for me, but it was a very fun show. And
I was
driving back from successfully returning my Apple Watch. And I enjoyed it greatly. But there was a thing that was said early on in the show that we were like, we got our show title. And then we forgot. But I guess we can't apply a show title from yesterday to today's show.
Do you remember it?
No.
Well, then,
I wrote down Pitbull, and I'm supposed to remember to pull an audio drop about a Pitbull.
Oh, you're supposed to send me or maybe you're supposed to send me the well drop that the listener was interested in that we started.
We call the show
talking.
Well.
Let's just do it. I don't know. I'll come up. Maybe we'll do that. Maybe I'll come up with something. I'll go through today's show, cut out a lot of the stuff that I said, and
I think today's show was good.
I think so. Okay. Cone's disease instead of Crohn's disease. Is that a joke? No.
Kind of, but I feel like it's on the edge of being at the expense of people with Crohn's.
And also, let's not maybe highlight that part of the show. Like, you know, I don't know. We'll figure it out. TBTL is mystery. What's the opposite of solving? Mystery starters? Well, I'm doing is extending this show in a way that is probably not super entertaining at this point.
Although we're getting towards the 2-hour mark.
I saw that. I was like, please, Luke, don't look at the clock. Son of a gun. If we are within 10 minutes of a 2-hour or a 3-hour
mark, you know me.
We have to go over the limit.
Well, you know, I'm a hard worker, Andrew.
It is true.
How about, can we go out with a Stereolab song?
Yeah, what do you like?
I don't know, actually, because I don't know the names of any Stereolab songs.
Yeah, me neither.
They all kind of flow together. They're all kind of weird and French, but I love them. Can we go with Prisoner of Mars by Stereolab?
That sounds good.
Off of Dots and Loops.
Okay. I got it right here. Oh, God. I was not a big Stereolab person, but I had a bunch of friends who were very into Stereolab in the late 90s when I was in college, and seeing this album cover, they just had such great style, man. Yeah, this is a great album cover. It's called Dots and Loops is the name of the record, and the song is, again, Prisoner of Mars.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. I can't tell you even what this song is going to sound like other than it's done by the band Stereolab, so hopefully it won't be totally like atonal and annoying. Thanks for listening. We're going to be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, have a great Wednesday, and please remember to mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.